Hey now, pickleballers. Welcome to the Dirty Side of the Court, America's leading pickleball podcast. If you're having trouble with your dink shots or your dill balls staying in the kitchen, don't worry. We don't know what that means. We're still an F1 podcast, but I'm running out of patience. Rob is here to be the optimist once again. Welcome, everybody.
Well, you know, it'd be boring if everybody enjoyed the same things about F1, right? So that's what I love about the sport, that we all find different things that we enjoy and that we don't enjoy. So last week, actually, we both agreed it was a dud. Yes. This week, I enjoyed it quite a bit more. I'm not going to say it was a banger. I'm not going to stand here and lie and say best race I've ever seen in my life. Right. But I had a number of things that kept me entertained pretty much from lights out to checkered flag.
I think that's great.
Last week, I kind of fell asleep because it was tire management mode from about lap three.
Yep. And you know what? I'm happy you have these perspectives, because if we had never started this podcast, I would just be in a funk, you know, watching this by myself, not having an outlet, not having a group of dirty siders to all share our thoughts and feelings. And boy, I'm down. So, and I got a lot of stats. It's a bumper stat edition, so people want to hang around.
I got good stuff.
Yeah, these Saturday races may suck for me to catch, but they're great for me to stat up by Sunday.
Okay, so we'll do our news and social, then we'll hit our review of Saudi, and then we'll obviously go into stats like we've never gone into stats before, and then we'll try and make up on the fly what we might be doing next week, because we actually have a break for once. So
we can preview Australia next week and a few other things.
We can preview Australia, yeah. Okay, so let's jump into the biggest news of the week. Everybody was talking about this one. A rare Ferrari stolen 28 years ago from an ex-Formula One driver, Gerhard Berger, has been recovered by police. I was kind of hoping you'd got the cheer sound effect for that, but, you know, you're not quick enough to react. It's fine. A red Ferrari F512M had been shipped to Japan after it was taken from Gerhard Berger in 1995, worth $350,000. It was one of two stolen, and the other one remains missing. But there we go. Ferrari recovered. That's it. See you next week.
Better late than never. It's just 29 years later. We've been working on this cold case for a while.
Do you reckon there was somebody there that's kind of been like, just one more year, boss, I can crack this case, I've got it.
It's like, gotta be. I mean, unless someone actually rang him up, go, hello? Yeah, I stole a Ferrari 29 years ago. Are you interested in knowing more about it?
Classic Columbo.
Classic. And then one thing that tickled my interest this week was Audi getting their act together and moving forward with the full takeover of the shareholding of the Sauber team from current owner is some investment group. This was expected to be completed by 26. It may be done early. The exciting part is, you know, Oliver Hoffman will be their chief board of directors of the Sauber companies, but Andreas Seidel, who we all have known and watched, will be the CEO of the Audi team. So it's coming sooner than later. I made the joke. Also, they're cars, right? They're road cars. Like the fast ones are the QS, right? Isn't like the...
It's whatever Tony Stark drove in Iron Man.
Yeah, SQ. What am I doing? I'm doing it backwards. SQ5 and SQ7 and 4s, of course. So will it be like the SQ25?
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I saw on this is... Were they supposed to always take 100%? I thought, I'd even read somewhere that Audi were only ever going to go up to, say, 75 or 80%, but they've gone, do you know what? Hold my beer. We're all in on this.
They approve plans, as I'm quoting from autosport.com, for a full takeover. So we'll see.
And I don't think it was supposed to be, but
I don't remember that being 100% either. But for all I know, full takeover just means more than 51% in whomever wrote this vernacular. So, because you would still have
majority
ownership.
I might be completely making it up, so let's just go with it, right? It was going to be 70, and now it's 100. Fact.
Done. Book it.
Talking of facts that need to surface.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Ben Solomon, what is going on with you and the FIA? So in a week where there wasn't already enough drama and news flying around the F1 circus, the head honcho himself has to get involved, and he's got two accusations against him now. One is interfering in the Alonso penalty in the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix last year. So Alonso got, I think, a 10-second penalty that would have dropped him off the podium. And then it kind of looked at, appealed, whatever. It got overturned and the 10 seconds was rescinded and he got to take his step on the podium. And I mean, I think I remember us at the time kind of going, they don't normally act on those so quickly to kind of turn them over. But oh well, you know, good old Alonso, and we're all aboard the Alonso hype train,
Right.
so everybody loved seeing him up on the step. But yeah.
I do remember that. I remember us talking about, boy, they must have had data that showed it wasn't worth a penalty. Wasn't this when he was in the grid box? I thought this was the grid box situation.
It could be. I don't know what it was, but it was the 10-second penalty that would have dropped him off the podium. And then the accusation is that old MBS has had a few words in a few people's ears going, it would be really great if a car carrying kind of like oil sponsorship could, you know, maybe make it up onto the podium in Saudi.
Oh, that was disappointing to read. But then whomever leaked that, speaking of leaking oil tankers, leaked more. They came out and said that he also had reasons to try to prevent Vegas from getting a certificate for racing. And whomever this whistleblower is basically said that he or she was directed to kind of find reasons to make this happen, to stop the FIA from certifying the circuit. That's nuts.
Why would, I mean, I don't get that one at all, because if you were head of the FIA and you're anti-Vegas, it feels like you would have had enough chances along the way to have maybe got in there and derailed it or whatever. But this is essentially saying it was in the week leading up to the race where they had to get certification for the track, or maybe weeks plural, but really close to the wire here. What's the upside there for the sport if all of a sudden they went, oh, that big thing you've all been working up to, Vegas, that's not happening. Sorry, guys, we can't certify the track. I mean, I don't know. It all just smells a little bit, that one does.
It does, and it does, but the first one doesn't. Actually, I don't like this guy. I haven't liked him in a while, and his old comments about women, and he just seems like a piece of work. And so if this is true, I would say something should happen, but we watch, nothing ever happens. Like, nothing's going to happen. Saudi Arabia, this one's confusing to me, Rob. So I was on the road this week, and I was trying to catch this in my feeds in between meetings and things. So they dropped a picture like Wednesday of this new track, Qiddiya. And so it's a 20-story high opening corner that apparently in 2027, the Saudi Arabian GP will move from Jeddah, where it was this weekend, along the sea there. It'll move to this other track. And apparently it's been being worked on by Alex Wurz, an ex-F1 driver, and Herman Tilke. Is this true? Is this like a real thing?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we got all caught out by a really early April Fool, but I mean, pictures were doing the rounds. It looked like Mario Kart had met F-Zero.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, these like tweets came out from a few F1 drivers that looked like they'd been hacked or at least been paid sizable sums, because it wasn't written in the way that they would normally say it. So Alonso dropped one that was talking about, I don't know, it'll be great to go racing here and pushing things to the limits and blah, 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 and quote tweeting this. I think Valtteri did, and I can't remember who the other one won. Maybe it was Nico, I'm not sure. But people were like reacting to these tweets going, are these real? It's like, Fernando, blink twice if you need help. It was just surreal what was going on around that. I mean, that can't be allowed to happen, right? A 20,
I don't know,
story high banked corner. I mean,
it is Mario Kart. It's Rainbow Road.
It is, and by the time that the FIA would crawl over and certify, I mean, if they didn't want to certify Vegas, by the time you kind of certified this, it would almost have to be completely enclosed, because there can't be any possible chance of some high-speed collision and a pirouetting car. They just kind of look over the edge and go, watch out below. I mean,
oh, that would be terrible. Yeah,
it would be awful. It couldn't be allowed to happen. I don't know. We're getting old, Brian. We're just look, we don't want change.
Well, I mean, you know, we were complaining about street circuits. Now we got Mario Kart circuits. We'll see if that happens. F1 Academy, I did not get a chance to watch enough of this weekend, but I do know how the last race ended. And so, first of all, we had a lot of great racing and a couple people who were almost always near the top, Abby Pulling and Doreen Pon. I can't do French names. And so they were giving us great battles and great, you know, great racing. And then in the last race, Doreen, this is mental, but I was watching Twitter when this all came across, missed the checkered flag and kept going at racing speed for an extra lap until she came back around and they had to put a red flag out after she crossed the line an extra lap after the race had ended, and no one had told her the race was done. And so she's out there pounding in race laps after the race. And her team didn't get on the blower and go, hey, FYI, you won.
So I was able to watch both races. I've got to say, thoroughly enjoyed it. It was fun. My only downer on it was it's not long enough. 12 laps isn't long enough. It goes by too quick. But so that's kind of a criticism, but really it's positive because I'd like to see more of it. It was good racing. But yeah, that was just really bizarre. It's like if she'd never won a race in her life before, I could imagine why the team got overexcited and didn't tell her and you know, whatever. They all got caught up in the moment. But she'd won Friday's race. So she was going in to win it again. And yeah, like you say, none of the teams sort of went, hey, yeah, good job, well done. You seem to be going really fast for a cool down lap, though. You might want to ease up. I don't. And then it really feels like a kicker to me that she gets penalized for it, not the team. It's like, you know, she's just in the zone. Okay, she misses the checkered flag, whatever. She can't count to 12 because she's just totally zoned in on and putting lap after lap after lap. It's like 12 laps of one rather than counting up, right? And no one comes in her ear to tell her to cool down, and she's the one that basically takes personal penalty for it. Like, feels like it could have been a fine for the team or something.
True. I hadn't thought of that. It definitely could have been a fine for the team. And sadly, because Abby was only 2 seconds back and a 20-second penalty, so she lost that race and Abby won the race. But it was fun. Abby was on the cooldown show, on the F1 cooldown show with another driver. But really, just it's fun to watch some of these young people, men and women. We'll talk about Ollie in a second, out there on track.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there were some great battles. There was one, and I don't remember the two. I tweeted it, but now I don't remember the two drivers it was between. But they were battling for 10th spot, and it was like everything. It was the most important position on the racetrack at that point, and it was just defending after defending. And I think I tweeted to basically say, "This is why I remember enjoying F1 more before DRS because she was able to park it big time." And by the way, parking the bus is going to be a theme that comes back for our race review anyway. So,
Mr. Magnussen.
Oh yeah. Okay, so what else we got in the news? Alpine. Whew. People keep on leaving.
I mean, the ship be sinking, baby, and they're grabbing life rafts.
So Bob Bell, championship winning engineer Bob Bell, has left his advisory role with Alpine. He was
Bob,
technical
really? He
director.
has?
Yeah.
I didn't know Bob. I was just
He was technical director when Alpine won their last world titles when they were Renault with Fernando Alonso back in 2005 and 6. He's been in advisory role since 2018, but yeah, he's gone over to Aston Martin as technical executive director, where he will reunite with Alonso. So that's another person leaving. We had Matt Harmon, technical director and head of aerodynamics, Dirk De Beer. De Beer, what a great surname. Have resigned from their roles. And they're going to have a whole new team structure under Bruno Famin. And you found a nice little screen grab on this. So why don't you take them through the new structure that was going to
Basically,
propel Alpine to the top?
they're going to somewhat mirror what McLaren has done. They're going to have a technical director of engineering, a technical director of aerodynamics, and a technical director of performance. And those three will work closely together and all report to Bruno, instead of having a single sort of technical director or head of engineering like that. They'll have three different technical directors as peers reporting up to Bruno. And yeah, this sounds great. It's working so well so far. So Alpine is what the name of the team is at this point. We haven't even gotten to the race and talked about Pierre, but we'll do that shortly. And
Yeah,
then,
but quickly, Brian, to the
yeah,
chopper.
to the chopper we go. I hate these stories. I hate these stories, but we'll do this quickly. So the first one is a good one. Max to Mercedes, Newey to Ferrari, Marco out. We saw these throughout the week. They really got fast and furious coming on the tails of last week's race in Bahrain when Max's dad, Jos, was seen talking to Toto for a while, and then all the rumor mill got going about Max to Mercedes, and oh, he can get out if Marco's not at Red Bull. So then, well, is Helmut Marko going anywhere? And then Toto, of course, had to jump in and go, well, if he leaves Red Bull, he's welcome here. Thanks, Toto. Apparently he printed it out and everything, and had
a. I have it printed out.
And so they're gonna, all these are rumors, and I think Toto is just on the side, sticking like the poker in the fire just to keep the embers going. It's like he's watching this mess at Red Bull and he's just doing this from the side. And I don't know if any of this will ever happen, but I do think there's a chance Max could leave. He seems like one of those people who will say, you know what, I'm the driver. Your car may be great, but watch, I can go take another car and become a champion. I could see him doing that because he's that good. But I don't know. Well, Rob, what do you think of this whole mess?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing that came out Thursday or Friday was when Helmut Marko was apparently on the verge of being suspended by Red Bull. And Max basically intervened. And when me and Marko basically come as a package, he's been right there with me right from day dot, getting me into karting and, you know, all the way through and, you know, maybe not that far back, but he's been highly instrumental in his career. He basically went, yeah, you kind of get rid of him, then not sure I'm sticking around. Then all that started swirling off to, yes, that's the exit clause he's got in his contract. Although he's under contract till 28, there's a number of get out of jail free cards he can play. And one of them is if Red Bull kick Helmut into touch. I'm like, what is going on? And I think you're right with Toto. It's like, okay, Red Bull are really, really dominant at the moment. And while I don't want to kind of get involved in all of this, if there's a little helping hand I can kind of help to push it a little bit further into disaster, I'm surprised they're not all doing it. Kind of like Toto finishes and takes the baton and gives it to Zach and goes, your turn, go.
Well, we'd love to have Max at McLaren. He's good friends with Lando, you know. We would have three drivers. Him, Oscar, and Lando would take turns, and they'd all get a week off. You want to come? I mean, I could totally see it. And then the downside of all this was the Horner stuff just keeps getting worse. And well, let's not touch it because we don't know what's what anymore. We knew what we knew last week. Nothing has changed except a lot of bad stuff. And so we're gonna. And there's mainly rumors, so we'll leave that alone. But I do still think Horner. I do think Horner will be out before the end of the year. I don't see how he survives this.
I don't know. I mean, away from the sordid rumors and stuff we don't want to touch, there was yet another swirl of this all got kicked off by Christian trying to go and buy the team.
Yeah.
Get together with financial backers to buy the team out, and then senior figures at Red Bull have not taken too kindly to that. It all got squashed, and now it's this big chess match of what's going to happen. I mean, anyway, yeah, let's
move it on. Let's talk
forget
about
that and crack open the video vault.
Let's do it. This is be more fun. Dealing with that flaming dog poop on the front door. All right. We have four good ones this week. I didn't have a ton of time with the travel and the meetings and the dinners, but why were the cars overheating? From the Mercedes F1 channel. They had a 13-minute video with James Allison and somebody else, whose name is escaping me now, where they actually asked each other questions about what they knew from Bahrain. It was awesome. Like, if you're really kind of into being a nerd for 13 minutes and listening to these people talk about this stuff, go for it. If you're not interested in the details of, like, a debrief of a car's performance or Mercedes, you can skip this one. And then we get to gold. So, Lollipop Man, back and better than ever. 6 minutes, the Bahrain GP review on the Lollipop Man channel. I loved this. I love this. Rob, we are both Lollipop Men.
It is so good. I did try to dip into the previous one you just talked about. I'm sorry, that could have been a short. Just tell me in 60 seconds why the cars were overheating.
Well, they did other questions,
need 30.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
I know, but like it just, it didn't float my boat. But this one, this is awesome. It's just the attention to detail. He just seems to be getting better and better and better at kind of putting all these little Easter eggs in there for you to look at. And it sort of encourages you to have to watch it multiple times. I don't know what you do, but I kind of sit there and watch it and drink it all in and just enjoy it and find it funny. And then I'll go back and watch it once I know the storyline. Right, what am I looking for? What's been hidden where? He's just very, very clever. Absolutely love it.
First of all, I'm proud to say we've been talking about Lollipop Man when very few people watched the Lollipop Man videos. We were like, a few hundred, maybe 1,000 or so. Now it blows up. Like, before I even see it, it's got 20,000 views. I mean, I love it.
Yeah,
it deserves all the attention.
It's great.
You're right.
Yeah.
The Easter eggs and the things in there are fantastic. But I'll say this. I hear the drivers in the Lollipop Man voices for the drivers. So like Carlos Sainz needs new appendix. You know, I mean, like I can hear like, the way he does the voices. I do the voices now, not as well, obviously, but enjoyed it. And then we have the C-Squared Challenge. Quickfire games with Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz on the Ferrari proper channel. It's 3 minutes long, but don't watch this one. They've done so many better videos and I have one to replace it for you. Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc, a Jenga match for the ages on the Ray-Ban Films channel. It's 5 minutes long. You have to go watch this one. It's so great. It is so great watching two guys being friendly but very competitive people play a game of massive Jenga and answer questions at the same time, and I couldn't have enjoyed it more.
Oh, well, I will watch that one while I'm editing the show and getting it ready for publishing, because that's what I, when I tend to dip into the ones that you really endorse, and the ones you say swerve, I trust you, and I swerve most of the time.
Yeah,
so.
Well, just this, the, of all of them, Lollipop Man and the Ray-Ban films are the winners. Let's close this up, though, because we got to get into a race review. And I'll be over here sleeping. Go for it, Rob.
Oh, you're so harsh. You're so harsh. But like I say, people find their own enjoyment their own way. So, yeah, practice really... Not a lot happened other than, you know, FP1 did what FP1 does. So did FP2. It was all kind of just trundling along nicely. And then we woke up to the news ahead of FP3 that Carlos Sainz has gone in for surgery for appendicitis. And Oliver Bearman is going to step into his shoes for FP3. It's like he just qualified, I think, on pole for FP2, yes. Kind of getting his head in space for that. And then someone's kind of, you know, phone's rung. Hello, who's this? It's Fred. Yeah, you're in. What do you mean I'm in?
So obviously we hope Carlos continues to recover well. He's trying to be back for Australia in 2 weeks time, the next race. That would be pretty aggressive. He looked very sore in the paddock as he was moving around because he just had his appendix removed. But the picture on his Twitter, and I think probably on Instagram as well, is fantastic. It's a picture of himself with his dad next to him on the phone, superimposed next to a picture of his dad in bed getting his appendix removed with his grandfather on the phone. It is perfect. And he writes, signs two, appendicitis zero. And so, and then Lando's the first comment. He's like, get well soon, matey. I loved it. I hope he's fine. But yeah, that set up a lot. And by the way, here's the second thing to tease. The stats are now fantasy. When this happened, I was like in the middle of a bunch of meetings and I had to figure out what to do with my fantasy team on the side. And it was a disaster, and it did not work out for me this week. And I can explain what happened, but boy, oh boy, did I poop all in the bed.
So that really kind of started giving us one of the biggest stories of the weekend. So this kid's going to get P3 to acclimatize himself to the car. And he ran quite a bit, which meant that actually he didn't get a lot of time. He didn't come into the garage a lot of times to do anything to the car, which basically means he took a car that was pre-built for Carlos Sainz and didn't get a chance to tweak it for quali, really, because as soon as you finish FP3, it goes into Parc Fermé. So they kind of left him out to do as many laps as he could, but I thought they might bring him in like 10, 20 minutes before the end even, maybe, to kind of go, right, what do we need to do to kind of reset the car for you? But fair play, he's just jumped in and gone, yeah, I'll just drive Carlos settings, it's fine. Give me a controller, I'm on. So... and did really, really well. So then we kind of came to quali where, oh man, we got a bit of a theme going already that Alpine and unfortunately Sauber just looked bad in quali trim. And we lost both of those two, as well as Logan. That Williams is not looking good. But before we get into the race, what's your thought on Williams, right? There was an interview with James Vowles that said... he wanted to try to get a car this year that was more consistent across all 24 races. So rather than have a car that was fast at maybe six or seven of them, get a car that was consistent across all of them. I don't think he meant consistently bad, though, did he?
So basically, Alex will always be finishing 13th as opposed to ever having a chance at getting a point.
It looks like
that's what it is, right? That's what we're saying at this point. Logan will always be 20th, depending on the Alpine boys. And who retires. But then we're going to have Alex trundling around 13th or so when I was expecting the old-fashioned Williams to show up, the slippery fast one, and see him in the points. And I feel bad for Alex.
Yeah, which by reading out those five that we lost meant that Bearman had gone and nailed it at least into Q2 on his first appearance. And boy, oh boy, did he almost make it into Q3. And talk about like foreshadowing, like almost... preventing the person that he's going to be the Ferrari driver next year. Lewis Hamilton is sitting there in 10th spot at risk. Bearman is flying, and it's like, I can't remember, it was like up or he was down like maybe a 10th or so at one point on the lap.
Was it that
like,
close?
Oh my gosh, could
remember.
He? Hmm?
Was it that close?
It was close. No, it was, because as he was coming through sector three, they're like, can he do it? Can he do it? Can he do it? And then didn't he miss out by an absolute tiny margin? Like it was small amount, but fair play to him. I mean, 11th, and he was obviously upset about it. He came on over the radio, but I think, I don't know if it was in quali, was it, where there was a shot of his dad where he kind of almost made contact with the wall, or at least the camera angle made it that he really, really kissed the as close as you can without making contact. And his dad's reaction, I think it was Crofty that kind of said, "There's that's just an absolute blend of both pride and horror all in one face."
Yes. Yeah, I loved watching his father in the paddock. It was exciting to see, and it was kind of funny too, because you had Carlos Sr. there, you had Oliver's father, and then you had John Elkann, who's the man at Ferrari, in the background, kind of shaking hands with both. I'm like, man, his dad was there to watch him in F2, was probably pretty pumped when he had the pole, and now he's at the back of the Ferrari garage for F1. I mean, that's but nervous the whole time watching him go right alongside these walls.
So yeah. While it was a valiant dropout in Q2 and Behrman can have his head held high, Hülkenberg, Ricciardo, Albon and K-Mag, I think, didn't set the world alight and probably could have maybe pushed. I thought one of those, you know, Hulk's done so well in quali recently, I was expecting maybe him to nudge into Q3. But no, that was that. So Q3 was set, and then Max did what Max does and went and put in an absolute stonker.
Yeah.
I actually thought Checo was going to take second, and we'll come back to this when we get to the race, but Charles pipped ahead of him. We had Checo, Fernando, the McLaren boys, the Hamilton boys, the Mercedes boys, and then Yuki and Lance Stroll, who will appear again in this review.
Yeah. So we get to the race.
You're jumping ahead of my final story. So
sorry. For things that I didn't care about, go for it.
It's all good. Things you didn't care. I know you didn't enjoy this Grand Prix, but don't just rattle through so this podcast 10 minutes long today. So obviously, Behrman was the big story of quali, and only 0.5 seconds behind Charles, which I think is an absolute stellar effort. But Yuki out-qualified Danny by quite a bit. This is supposed to be Danny Ric's year of auditioning for the Red Bull seat, and I'm just going to say that this weekend did not do him any favors whatsoever.
He had a terrible race too. Like, did I miss something happen? Did he have?
He had a bad, I think, in the safety car pit stop thing. Didn't he get something like a 41-second delay or something going through there?
Joe got one of those too. Yeah, he did have a longer one. You're right, but not that long. And anyway.
I think it was. I think it was a bit of a race ruiner. However, but we'll get there. Maybe when we come to summing up later, I'll put a pin in that. What do we get to lights out, Brian?
Well, Lando left, as far as I could tell, he was moving while the lights were red, and then apparently stopped still with his tires touching enough paint to be considered in the pit box, and then took off. But that hosed up his momentum and ruined the beginning of the race for him. Interestingly, there are some people, especially the F1 tech folks like Sam Collins and Alex Brundle, were sitting there saying they believe there are two regulations. One, you got to be in the pit box, which they think he may have been able to stop in time to have his front tire still just touching a tiny bit of paint. But he had moved when the lights were red in a way they didn't think you were allowed to do. So you got to be immobile. So there's still a question after the race about that. So not just the being in the box part, which I think we all knew, but rather you can't be rolling forwards when the lights are red.
Okay.
You can't start behind your box, you know, and get a head start running at the
line.
So
I follow, now I'm going to get the name wrong. Something like F1 Coffee Corner on Instagram. And he did a quick kind of, what went wrong here and why did the stewards get the call wrong? And he said, look, the main thing is that there's a transponder underneath the car and you have to have the transponder in line with the contact patch so that it can detect the false start. That's why you can't angle the car too much left or right, because if you're too aggressive in angling your car, you won't have the contact with the transponder and you'll get deemed a false start. Okay, great. Apparently the transponder failed and didn't send any data. And they ruled that because they couldn't get the transponder data, they could not issue a penalty for a false start, even if we all saw it with our own eyeballs.
He was moving.
It said the regulations, yes, but the transponder has to report it as per the regulations. And what
I have
eyes. But if the regulations say it has to be the transponder data, then they're screwed, right? However, apparently they quoted a specific regulation which talks about the transponder. What they didn't quote then was the next one, which talks about being able to kind of see that the car actually moved. And the key thing in there is the sentence is, there's three of them. There's three things that you can evaluate for a false start. And each sentence ends in or, not and. So it's not that you have to have the transponder and this and visual sighting. They were all oars. So basically, if the transponder failed, you should have been able to use, like, I don't know, common sense and gone, he moved, it's a false start. But
all I could hear was when George got on the radio, I heard the lollipop man. Blimey, Lando jumped the start. Sorry, I'll stop doing that.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Can't get enough lollipop,
and everyone got away really, really well, apart from the Gasman, who nearly didn't even make the formation lap. I mean, that car was broken before he even settled into his pit box, I think.
I love the debate about him doing the burnouts. Like, oh, it must be fine if he can do a burnout. Turned out not. We had everybody on mediums except Ollie Bearman and Valtteri on softs. And then they took off, and the gas man was done. He's like, turns out we only have 5 of the gears we need. 6, 7, and 8, we don't got those, so come on back in, boy. And they put the car away, and they said, we'll try again next time. Like, well, that worked out, Pierre.
Yeah.
And then talk about a little bit at the beginning, because I don't have a ton.
No, I mean, I think we had some nice battles with Perez going after Charles. I was interested to see how long Charles might hold him off for. Charles at one point was kind of bouncing in between, ooh, will he get into Max's DRS? Or can he shake Sergio? And I think, unfortunately, for maybe the race as a spectacle from that point, Charles got too interested in his rearview mirrors because he had another Red Bull hunting him down, and all of a sudden the 0.9, the 1.0, the 1.1 that it was bouncing back and forward with Max just quickly got into a 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1, and this is now measured in weeks rather than seconds, and Max was done. And then we had Perez finally got Charles on the fourth lap, nice overtake, and here was me now thinking, right, you're a street circuit guy, apparently. You're king of the street circuits. You won this race last year. Yes, Max had trouble and was trying to catch you by the end of the race, but you held him off quite... Yeah. Yeah. You know, very well. He wasn't all over your gearbox at the end of the race. So off you go. Here you go.
Catch up to Max.
Lap four. You're only a few seconds down the road. Let's see what you got, Checo. Apparently not a lot. But
Well, not as bad as last week. That's so mean to Checo. He did better than last week. He acquitted himself better than last week. He wasn't that far off of Max, and he was ahead of Charles by a decent amount. I mean, it was like he was in a gap between the two, right? Is the way I looked at it. You had Max,
yeah, and
space. Checo, space, Charles is the way I saw that. So yes, he's a street track guy, apparently. And that means he at least knows he's going to be on street tracks the second best.
Yeah, I just wanted more from him there. I thought that finishing nearly 14 seconds behind Max by the end of the race, where Max didn't really even need to push towards the end. No. He wasn't making any inroads whatsoever, and only finished like 4 or 5 seconds clear of Charles. So you've got a car that was obviously fast enough for Max to drive. I mean, this is the same. This is kind of rinse and repeat from last year, right? The car in the hands of Max does one thing. The car in the hands of Checo's does others. And in my wildly optimistic thing that I did last week from Bahrain, again, we saw that the gap from Max to third was actually smaller in this year's Saudi than it was last year. So cars are getting closer to Red Bull, but not enough that's going to derail the title challenge for Max. I do still think Checo's potentially in trouble for second spot in the WDC this year.
You know,
I do.
You for second? Interesting. I thought you were going to say for his seat. I go, you know who's not getting a seat? Danny Ric at this point. No matter how much Horner loves him, he can't tootle around in the back in the RB. And as Zach Brown likes to say,
AlphaTauri or VCarb or their name of the week. Looks like they're, you know, certainly...
Name of the week.
Insert name here.
Oh, man. Lance hits the barriers. We saw he cut two... Go, what?
Oh, no. I was just reacting to what you're saying, Brian. It was awful. It's like...
Oh, it's terrible.
Who was I talking about it? I think we had Matt Trumpets on the show from the Missed Apex podcast. I was listening to their one when I was driving to my football practice this morning. I was listening to them, and he said, you know, when you're in a street track and everything is laser focused, especially for the first few laps, you are wired in on trying to get a good start and then be clean. Clean lap after clean lap after clean lap. And we tend to see safety cars here towards the second half of the race where people are starting to tire a little bit of mental fatigue creeps in, and you clip a corner that you shouldn't and boom, race over. This was like whatever it was, lap six? I mean, it's just an awful mistake that if Logan Sargeant makes that, he gets absolutely rinsed for it. Stroll does it. And this time last year, he was starting to feature in my top three drivers of the season, my famous quote. And this year, it's just like, he's almost driving like, well, my dad's not going to sack me, so, you know, whatever. It's just...
Well, I mean, I the two parts that came from this that I enjoyed, and obviously not seeing Lance crash because it was a high speed crash. It was bad. The angle he came off the inner wall that he hit and lost his front left steering and suspension and went straight ahead into the barrier was nasty. But we had people not pit under the safety car, which meant Max did pit under the safety car, so he couldn't get the Grand Slam because he didn't lead those laps. Look at you, Lance, taking away Max's Grand Slam. And then...
What, you're petty, aren't you?
Yeah. There were three things I enjoyed about this race, and this was one of them. Again, not Lance's crash, but the safety car drama of all this stuff. So that was the first part of it. And then, you know, the second part was we got people on different strategies. The people who stayed out, at least, it didn't work, but at least we saw people out of position a little, which created some overtakes. I don't know. I'm done. I'm ready to talk about K-Mag, so I'll let you go for a while.
This is the problem with... Jeddah is a circuit that by itself doesn't offer much. It is Monaco at speed, and it doesn't really have many good overtaking spots. It really heavily relies on DRS, and what it also heavily relies on to really spice it up is safety cars. Yeah. So on face value, you think, fantastic, we got one after lap five. The problem was this safety car almost couldn't have been timed worse to destroy the race. And part of this, I'm going to have a little rant at Pirelli here, because people have been saying on the race pace simulations that the hard tire that they bought to this circuit would do the whole length of the race. Without a shadow of a doubt, it could have done all 50 laps or 52, whatever it was. You could have done that on the hards by themselves. It was only a mandatory stop that would mean you'd have to change it. With that being said and that being true, which it did turn out to be, that meant that any kind of strategy of how long are you going to run the mediums before you jump to hards, or are you going to try to take the softs as long as you can, because Behrmann had started on softs, all of that got nullified, because now everybody pretty much, other than the couple that didn't, just go, right, well, here we go, mandatory switch to hards, we don't need to stop again for the rest of the race. So by lap five, we had no more pit stops to get excited about for the lead of the race. We just had the medium runners were going to go as far as they could, strap on softs and hope that they could do something, which they couldn't. It really needed, at about lap 35 to 40 window, it needed a second safety car to really throw the cat amongst the pigeons, and we just didn't get it. And I hate sitting there willing somebody to crash, but I'm going, this is just hard run to the end now, and because of that, no one's going to over push because they don't want to bake these tires. So I'm just going to say, shame on Pirelli. If they knew that the hards could do the entire race, why not shift the compounds one to the left so that we just brought softer set in? We didn't do the softest three, did we?
No,
in this one?
There was still the C5 was not used. It was C2, C3, C4. They could have moved it all the way one left. Yes, softer for each.
And then that hard would not have potentially have lasted, and we might have had some jeopardy on them.
Right. Or they could have done, we also know they could have done, you know, they can leave gaps. But to your point, you didn't want the hard to be as hard as it was. You wanted it all shifted left, because it was a couple years ago where they had that weird gap in between the tires they brought. Anyway, yeah, K-Mag then came to the rescue. K-Mag, thank you, man. Thank you for making this race interesting, even if half the time you were a clot doing it. I loved it. First of all, he hits Alex. He hits Alex. Alex is just going in a straight line, and K-Mag is kind of too, but he's taking an angle for the corner, just hits him, gets a 10-second penalty, and then a couple seconds later, like literally two laps later, he makes a dive bomb on Yuki, an all-time dive bomb. I mean, this is an old school, I got this corner, and then he goes so far off the track to own the corner, and then just keeps going down the road. And they're like, yeah, that's you know, last year's a 5-second penalty if you don't give it back. Not only did he not give it back, he just took off. And then I think he even put his middle finger up, said, suck it. And then he got a 10-second penalty. So now we're dealing with 20 seconds of penalties. And at this point, his race is ruined. But he decided, and we'll get to this in a minute because we're not there yet, he's going to take other people with him. And I'm like, K-Mag, I am here for you. They joked he should be driver of the day, but it's pretty hard to do with two massive penalties.
Yeah. I mean, we'll come to K-Mag in a minute. We had then Oscar. And do you know what? So this is where I'm going to say that, and maybe this comes from me as a fan of football as a sport, where I can celebrate a 0-0 and I can marvel a well-ground out. No, but exactly. If one team is just like hanging on by the skin of their teeth and they really should lose this game, but they collect all of their energy to just not lose and see it over the final, over the finishing line, that can be really, really enjoyable to watch. Defense can be really, really enjoyable to watch when it doesn't result in an overtake for me. And Lewis roll back the years to kind of just fend off the young whippersnapper where Oscar was in his DRS forever. Yes, he was.
He was.
But Mercedes, go on.
He was behind him forever because the McLaren's DRS is pathetic. Did you hear some of the stats? Yes. Did you hear some of the stats? Like when Red Bull, when Checo got by and his DRS was open, it's like it was 22 miles an hour faster in the speed trap, or kilometers per hour, 22 kilometers per hour faster. They said on average it's about 16 kilometers an hour faster when your rear wing is open. The McLaren's, 6. It was 6.
Which is still faster, right? It's not a drag system where it held him back, right?
But you're two and car lengths behind at least. 6 kilometers an hour. All it did was just get him closer.
Okay, but why did it... if he'd have actually been able to be right tucked up under the rear wing as they came into it, he would have got past him, no problem at all in the final straight. But that Mercedes in Lewis's hands through the... Where the Mercedes was better through the corners than the McLaren was. The McLaren had better straight line speed. But the Mercedes through the corners was exposing the weakness in the McLarens, and Lewis would disappear through the corners and then put his car in the right place to not allow Oscar. The couple of times Oscar had a sniff, Lewis deployed button that made that Mercedes twice as wide.
He did, I agree with you. He did good. He had good defending. I agree, but you're making it sound
like
it
started
was a,
this little.
Hold on, it wasn't a master class. He only had to defend a handful of times. Most of the time, he was just looking in his mirror, like waiting, and Oscar just couldn't get close enough. Like in my mind, let's not compare it to Fernando in Hungary when Esteban won and Fernando held Lewis off for 4 laps each corner, at each time, putting his car perfectly each time, getting even dirty a little bit. Yeah,
I didn't use the word masterclass. I just said that Lewis rolled back the years and did a good defending job, which he did.
All right, then I'll agree with you. Fine, but yeah, let's not oversell it. Let's just make a headline.
And I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed. Yeah. Oscar must have had. You had been a little bit disingenuous to Oscar. He had more than a handful of attempts at getting past him. There were a couple where they almost went side by side, and Oscar ended up locking up, and Lewis just would not let him past, which kind of ruined Oscar's race because he needed to clear.
Yeah, sorry.
No, go on.
I was very confused at this point because they kept showing the two of them coming down the straight and Oscar would go for the overtake and either he'd make it or not, but they'd cut to the camera in turn two. And the camera in turn two made the papaya McLaren look red like a Ferrari. And every time it came around, I'm like, wait, what? There's a Ferrari behind him?
Yes.
Lewis? Is this Behrman? What's happening? And like, oh, that's a McLaren. Because then they'd cut to the next camera and it was papaya again. I don't know what was wrong with that camera. It got me at least
weird.
3 times.
Yeah, don't worry. It wasn't even you and your color blindness. It was proper wrong. It was.
I still don't know what papaya looks like, but
I got caught by the same thing. I'm like, what? What's that? But also, just to kind of note at this point, is there may also be a difference in why I'm enjoying this race a lot more than Brian is, because Brian's not watching it live and is sad in his basement, kind of watching it on his laptop or whatever he's doing, because he had a feel sorry for Brian. He had a bad, busy weekend and he just couldn't watch the race live. I, on the other hand, had my son home from college and we went to the bar and I drank beer and I hung out with the couple of guys that support the Haas team and we just enjoyed. So probably didn't watch all 50 laps because I'm drinking beer and chatting. So
and you had
maybe
soccer
I
too at the
roast,
same time. Right?
And I had Arsenal on the, we got the bar staff to put the Arsenal game on as well. So sometimes everything was happening in the Arsenal game. I would pivot head around and watch that. So maybe I enjoyed it more because I was slightly alcohol fueled as well. But then we come into K-Mags, and I'm going to put this in masterclass of defense.
This was, I agree with you. This was the highlight of the race for me, just something that happened. Not saying it was great, but...
It is great. I think, now, some people are saying, oh, it's genius, K-Mag being a real team player and kind of helping Hulk get off down the line. Now, yeah, okay, I'm going to give him his dues, but if he hadn't been served the penalties, do you think if they'd come over the radio and gone, hey, K-Mag, we need you to do us a favor. Hulk is definitely ahead of you. You're not going to catch him. So can you hold the others up so that he can get a pit stop ahead? That was never going to happen.
Never.
But the fact
that
he
had
got 20
so
seconds,
many penalties. He had 20 seconds of penalties. That's Ocon style. And they're like, we're going to need you to stop the whole world behind you. 12 to 16 was a train. K-Mag, Yuki, Esteban, Alex, Logan. And then Danny Rick rocked up on the scene at one point. And then even Valtteri poked his head in there. He's like, hey, remember me? And all these people are like, let's make this thing a train. Choo-choo. And no one could pass Magnussen. It was fantastic. And you literally could hear him. They put it on the broadcast of the camera from the rear of the car. And they played the audio from the car. And where he should be accelerating hard, you heard him just kind of like tapping the accelerator at certain points.
And this is the genius of it, because the way in which he slowed down the field, he was never going to get a next set of penalties and get black and white flagged or taken out of the race because he didn't do it in the braking zones and cause dangerous situations to the people behind him. He drove the wheels off that thing in a straight line because it was so fast. He attacked corners like he should attack corners. Then as he came out of the corner, he was like, yeah, where's the accelerator again? And he just eased his way. And once these F1 cars lose all their momentum in a corner, even the car behind, even if they've got slightly a better acceleration, they're never going to be able to out-drag him out of that corner. So by backing everyone up by doing it through, what should we call it, gentle acceleration out of corners?
Maybe, yeah.
It was brilliant. And then you get that Haas back up to speed. That Haas looks quick this year. It's not destroying its tyres. So people weren't going to fly past him on the straight. He'd get to the corner. He'd hit the braking zone. And then he would just ease his way around the corner again. And before you know it, you're looking at that gap and going, they're going to do this.
Nico's going to get a pit stop.
He hadn't stopped, has he? And he needed the buffer to
be
able to get
a stop.
Pit stop.
That's right.
Just
he was
so
battling
well
with Joe. It was he and Joe. Joe was behind him by enough where they thought then Joe had to pit too, which we'll talk about shortly. And I believe they're still finishing that pit stop this week. And so Hulkenberg pitted, took 3 or 4 seconds. He gets out there and he's back in the points. And kudos to them. And so more on this in a second. More on the fact that Kevin Magnussen still finished 12th. Maybe I'll do that now. That was fascinating to me when the race ended. And we got more race to come, but I'm just the Magnussen thing here. He finishes 12th. And I am really confused. I'm like, why would that have been right? Because the cars behind him weren't 20 seconds behind him. And so I'm like, did they not apply the penalty? Did Ben Zelayem decide we're writing this one off too? And I'm going to, you know, delete the penalty. But what happened was Magnussen was the last driver on the lead lap. And because when you're a lap down, your race finishes when the leader finishes. Max finished the race. Everyone who was behind him and a lap down is done when they cross the checkered flag. But Kevin was still ahead of him. And so because of that, Kevin's time is timed by the amount of time behind Max he is. Everyone else didn't finish the last lap because they're a lap down. So their time is, quote, one plus one lap. So Kevin could have had an hour of penalties. But as long as he finished ahead of Max and anyone behind him was behind Max, he would have always been 12th. I thought that was really fascinating. I did not know that.
I didn't know that was one. And then I saw some people talking about, again, brilliant execution from K-Mag, because once they'd secured Hulkenberg's pit stop, he got the hurry up then because they knew, I think they knew this, that if he needed to get the foot down to stay ahead of Max so that he prevented himself from getting lapped, because as soon as he became lapped, he would have been screwed, right?
I guess.
So
I don't know how that would happen then. I'm not sure if they apply time to that. I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't know at that point there. But anyway, he did enough to kick. He never got lapped, and he did a great, great job. Then we kind of had that, like, will we, won't we get the drama of people going in. The people that hadn't stopped yet went in and threw on softs. The main two were Lewis and Lando, and you thought, right, can they now do a sprint? What's the delta going to be between hards that have almost lasted since lap four and fresh softs? And I just think maybe they tripped over each other too much.
A little bit.
Behrman did a good job and accelerated and kept the gap. They didn't eat into his.
Pirelli did a good job, giving him tires that wouldn't fall off.
Yeah. So you never really got it. They did light up the times when they first came out. It looked like the pair of them might hunt down Behrman, but they just seemed to then get caught up in kind of defending against each other. And once they did that, they probably overcooked their tires and got rid of any advantage they actually had, because they then just held station. They didn't really attack each other, and they never got within. Oh, they never got within sight of Behrman's DRS. That was a superb drive from him to bring that home in seventh.
He did a great job.
Absolutely fantastic.
Amazing job. I don't think there's enough that can be said for a guy who was running F2, gets to run someone else's car in FP3, and then ends up coming home seventh. I don't care what car it was and how good it was for him to do that with, as you said already, Carlos's setup, when he's never run a race like this, never driven this car. I mean, that's intense. And the thing I would highlight is the difference in G-force that an F2 car pulls versus an F1 car was evident, because Ollie Bearman's headrest was smushed on the outside because his head kept hitting it as he was going around the track. His neck was not ready for this type of assault, because you don't need that in F2. And yes, you train for it, but you don't have experience doing this. So if you go look at the picture, the headrest that they put in there to stop their heads from bouncing around is literally smushed on the side because the amount of time his head kept clunking into the side of it. No other driver has that problem. And this guy didn't let that slow him down at all. He nailed it.
He did. And I meant to shout this out in qualifying, but let's do it now, being as we're talking about him. And again, I could have these facts slightly wrong, but just run with it because it makes for a better story.
Sounds good. Yeah,
is
good.
That his mental capability to swap from F2 to F1 between thinking he was going to be racing in F2 to then jump into free practice, right? And put in lap times and quali times that were very, very competitive is astounding, because his mental programming from the previous 2 days would have had all of those corners and all of those braking zones coming at him at what apparently I heard was 14 seconds a lap slower, the difference between an F1 car and an F2 car. So he's going around and doing a lap in, like, whatever is it, 145 rather than the 130s. So the speed with which he sees corners coming, where he's sighting his braking point and where he needs to brake is all completely wired into F2. And then they tap him on the shoulder and say, yeah, forget all of that. Here you go, Men in Black Neuralizer. Let's go and do an F1 car instead. How the heck he did that?
I don't
that
know.
That is amazing.
It Absolutely is amazing. It puts him up there in those, maybe not quite there yet, but that Liam Lawson territory of people who have shown what they can do, and you know they deserve a seat. He's not quite, one race is great, and he did great. He deserved to be driver of the day as he was. But you know who deserved not to be the pit stop crew of the day? And again, it's not their fault. I know that. Sauber. So Valtteri didn't get the 52-second stop this week. Joe did. And it looked like the same problem. It looked like the wheel nut thing.
Yeah.
And they came off, and then they're putting the wheel back together. And hold on a second. Let me run this back to the garage and get a new one.
I got
and
some
they had
super
to do
glue
it.
Somewhere.
Oh, my God. It happened again. It happened again. And Joe was on my team. And all those juicy overtakes that he had earned from starting 20th because he missed the start line in quali by like a millisecond, all of those juicy overtakes and positions gained, I was sitting here thinking, all right, look at all these points. And
that's a good point. We didn't cover that at all. We completely forgot to talk about that, which was Joe's big crash.
Yeah, well, I'll talk about it when we get to fantasy, because my whole team, if something could have gone wrong, it did. They got appendicitis, they crashed, they had 52-second pit stops. I tried to get rid of RB, V-carb, whatever the name of the week is. I ruined it. All went down bad. Anyway.
So podium, I should have stuck to my guns, and last week I think I had the prediction of Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez. I had the right three, but in the wrong order, because it's another Red Bull 1-2. Max, do you know what? I think I've counted maybe three people that were in witness protection this week, which was Max, Fernando, and George, because I don't think they were racing this weekend.
And Logan, you didn't see him either. Even in that K-Mag train, you'd see his car, but they never said the word Logan Sargeant. And he never mounted an attack on anybody. I wasn't even sure it was the
Woods. By the way, things you were beating him up and saying it's his lot in life to finish 20th every week. He finished 15th, and he finished ahead of Danny Rick and Bottas and Joe.
Well, okay.
Okay, come on. Are we going to have any kind of apology for Mr. Sargeant here?
Yes, we should. Logan.
But anyway.
Logan the... Sergeant, I apologize. For what, I'm not really sure, but I'm very sorry.
And he's only four places behind Alex. I think we've got this year, if that Williams isn't as good, you can only rate, in my mind, you rank Sergeant against Alex and how many times he crashes. And so far, we're 2-for-2 that he hasn't smashed the car up yet. So anyway, back to the top. Verstappen and Perez, Red Bull 1-2. You know, they did exactly what they needed to do in terms of bringing it home as a 1-2. I was underwhelmed by Perez's ability to put any type of gap closing on Max. Charles did a, you know, solid job. And the Ferrari now looks to be well clear of the field just after two races. So it looks like we've got three tiers developing here, where we've got Red Bull, a league of its own again. Ferrari getting closer, but not close enough, maybe. I guess we'll see on some of the other tracks. But they seem to be clear enough that if they don't run into troubles like appendicitis or braking issues, that maybe the two Ferraris will be right up behind them. And then we've got a pack which is, it's almost throw a dice and see which way it goes, because you've got the McLarens, you've got the Mercedes, you've got, well, I hate to say it, you've got Alonso. I can't say you've got Aston Martin, you've got Alonso.
Right, yep, yeah, yep.
And then it looks like we're going to get Haas and Williams, maybe, if Alex is there. Alex finished 11th. Maybe it's Haas and those guys then scrapping over points at the bottom. But it doesn't look like it's going to be anybody from Toro Rosso, Sauber, or Alpine that are ever worried. We're going to need a lot of cars to crash out for those guys to be knocking on the door of points at the moment, it feels.
It is wild, yeah. But... Are we at King of the Pits in the pits?
I think we're King of the Pits versus the Pits. So let's do King of the Pits and remember to play the music this week.
I've got it right here. Ready.
Hey, you're the king of the pits.
All right, for me, this is easy. Do you want to go first or shall I?
I'm going to go first because I think you went first last. No.
Great, go for it.
I'll go on after you. I'm going to be British and say after you.
Oh, all righty then. I share the title for this week's King of the Pits, Max and Ollie. Max, because you can't...
Get those splinters out your ass and pick a King of the Pits. It's not Kings of the Pits. It's King of
Max.
The Pits.
It's Max. It's like the MVP award in basketball. He'll get it for a couple weeks here in a row. And then when we're tired of giving it to him, we'll give it to someone else. But he'll still have earned it. And the same way we do with the MVP award.
I'm going to gloriously display my British loyalty and give it to Ollie, because I just think, especially this one, like we said, Monaco at speed. I was totally thinking towards the end, like you said, his head's bouncing around everywhere. He's going to crash at some point. He just is. And bring it home seventh and to beat, you know, Lando, Lewis, kind of. He took some big names he beat. So
yeah. All right, well, then let's shift gears here a little bit.
You're the pits!
And this one is incredibly easy for me. It's the French team, formerly known as Renault. It's known as Alpine right now. It is bad. And I know, yes, Esteban finished, what, 13th? Yeah, let's celebrate that for a couple minutes. Pierre couldn't even get started. They look bad.
So my the pits, and I hate doing this to him because, you know, biggest smile in Formula One, but it's Danny Ric. Well, I know he suffered from a bad pit stop, right? But it then just felt like he basically just threw in the towel and went, well, that's my race done, I might as well just pull around at the back. No, you're supposed to be auditioning for the Red Bull seat. You've come in on this big wave of enthusiasm. You've bought last year's Red Bull. This car's supposed to be quick. Maybe it's not your fault. It's not. But Yuki's up the road from you and he's killing you this week. And you don't even really seem to be that concerned. It's like the drama at the end of last week where they kind of nearly wiped each other out. Well, it was all on Yuki, but after the finishing line, it feels like Yuki has taken that into this week and used it to kind of write, I'll show him, I'll beat him this week. And Dan is just too busy smiling.
Yeah, I don't know. One last thing on this before we play Paul. It arrived while we've been recording, so neither one of us have heard any of what Paul has to say. So I'd like to apologize in advance for any expletives. Should there be any? He's had some travel problems. So, Paul, thank you again for sending this in. But one thing we didn't hit is when Lance hit the wall and then went into the barrier and the team said, are you all right? And he said, I am. And they go, can you bring the car back? Can you bring the car back? Did you have any on boards? Did you see any of what just... Can you bring the car back? Are you kidding me? No.
I mean, if I get out and go and pick my wing up, I could probably throw it in the back and, you know,
the front left wheel
isn't really kind of there anymore. But
I gotta go download that sound. It was like Grosjean's in the fence jumping over the fire. Can you bring the car back? What were they thinking about? Anyway, it's time for Paul. Now, because this came in late, I have to actually open a separate window. Apologies. Here it is. Paul from the road.
Hey now. So, I'm recording this from the plane, so quality might be patchy, but let's push on. Let's push on. Defeat is never an option. So, let's talk about the race briefly. As we expected, some good midfield battles, especially towards the end. Pack, what are we talking, 11 through to 16, whatever it was, which sort of furthers my claim that points should be given all the way back there. I think that makes things a lot more interesting and a lot, you know, just gives those guys more to fight for. And I think seeing the little battles back there is good, but yeah, it's sort of a little bit futile when there's nothing to gain for it. But okay. Max and Perez, okay, whatever, ignore them, and yeah, it was sort of, do we call it another boring race? I mean, it's not the best track, it's okay, I don't know, It was okay. We'll leave it as okay. I just think a game, I know I've mentioned this last year, but one-stop races where it's just like soft, hard, or medium hard, it just doesn't allow for anything substantial to happen in the race. So I'm gonna say it was okay. It was okay. That's really it. The Red Bull saga continues. We just need Max to sign for Mercedes. That I'm pretty sure that's imminent, if I'm being honest with you. And then it really opens up another crazy season of driver changes, which I think is exactly what we all want anyway. So I'm a few hours outside of Australia now, so landing a little bit early. So for now, sorry if the quality of this one's been atrocious, but yeah, hey-ho, there we go.
Paul, thank you so much for doing
finishing
that.
On a rhyme.
I loved it. That was a great recording. I'm with you, Paul. Actually, I would say full on boring. So that's where I had it. But thank you for
okay.
Saying
okay.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Little okay. Challenge for you before we move into your stats.
Okay.
It'll give you time to think about which jingle.
I already
play.
Know which one.
You have to watch again tomorrow, either Bahrain or Saudi Arabia. Which one are you picking?
I'll be watching the inside of my eyelids.
No. Come on. I don't want you to have to
Saudi Arabia. I'd watch Saudi Arabia again. I'd watch that race over Bahrain again. Not even close.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said right at the beginning, not a banger by any means. Enough to keep me entertained. However, that was also probably because I was sipping a beer at the time as well.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You gave me two bad options. If you had to eat a cockroach or eat a cricket, which one are you going to eat? They're both bad.
I'm just trying to work out which one you enjoyed because you've kind of labeled both of them as snooze fests. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, no. Saudi Arabia at least was a passable race. The problem is Max and Red Bull. And there's not enough infield fighting. That track is not great for overtakes, which I'll get to in a second, because it is time for SAP Stats. SAP Stats, Saudi Arabian GP Edition. All right, so this is a combo I've borrowed from many sources and created some of my own. Verstappen claimed a 9th consecutive race victory, tying the second longest streak in F1 history with Sebastian Vettel, and of course, trailing his own 10, which he had done prior. He's never won the opening two races of a season, though, before. This is the first time. So, if you're looking
for a shout for winning the championship,
he could go 100%.
Singapore's still there. Come on, Singapore.
Maybe that's why they redid this whole car, just to get Singapore.
Oh, my gosh. Redesigned it. Right, we're going to keep all the brilliant stuff, but that one thing that's rubbish that we lose Singapore on, we nailed it.
That's why I knew he's still there. Verstappen claimed his 100th career podium finish, only the 7th driver to reach that total. The other drivers ahead of him, just because I went deep on the stats, Lewis, 197 podiums. Schumacher, 155. Vettel, 122. Prost, 106. Tied with Alonso at 106. Kimi with 103, and then Max now with 100. Rounding out the top 10, though, because it'll give me a chance to do this, you'll have number 8, Senna, 80 podiums, Rubens at 68 podiums in 9th, and Valtteri just one behind with 67.
This is Valtteri Bottas, and you're listening to the dirty side of the track.
Oh, Valtteri, not now. I'm trying to do the pod. And then Lee pointed out that 53.4% of the time when he races, Max finishes on the podium. Thank you, Lee, for that. That's insane. He has now, Max has now led the Drivers' Championship for a greater percentage of his career than Senna did. 29.81. So 30% of his career he's been in the lead of the Drivers' Championship, which is insane. Max will go to Australia in 2 weeks' time, having not retired for a race in 2 years. 2 years. It was actually Australia 2022. Red Bull's 115th win, we talked about this last week, puts them fourth alone, now surpassing Williams. They had been tied before in terms of total victories for the team. Mercedes still first, 125. McLaren, 183. Sorry, Mercedes third, 125. McLaren, 183. And Ferrari, 243. I did not realize how far ahead they were.
I know. I mean, but that is because Ferrari have been driving since 1862. So, but that Mercedes 125 is easily doable this year.
It is. It really is.
Maybe by the break.
And Max's podium number, he'll easily be fourth in podiums this season. He's only 6 away from being tying for fourth. So, man, a lot of more records to come. Checo, P2 in the second Red Bull, starts the year with consecutive second-place finishes, which is good because, as we talked about last week, he's not finished this high since in any of the last 8 races of 23. Charles, P3 today. Ferrari's the only other team than Red Bull to finish on the podium. Obviously, it was Carlos last week, Mr. Appendicitis. Oscar took fourth from McLaren, who was a good way back, but he took fourth from McLaren. Notably, he didn't finish in the top five in any of the opening eight races of last season. Obviously, they had those upgrades in Austria, which helped. Piastri's result was McLaren's best ever finish in Jeddah. P5. Here, now we're going to get into a little bit of the weeds, and I love these. Fernando was P5. He scored in both races this season, but he's finished lower than he started each time. Lower than he started each time. And I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. P6 for Mercedes.
Wait.
You'll wait?
I can't wait. Do it now.
No. George Russell's achieved top six finishes in both races this year. P7 for Ferrari. Ollie Bearman became the 68th driver to score in his F1 debut, which Crofty got right off the top of his head during the race. And he was the first British driver to score on debut since Paul d'Aresta in 2011. Couple stats here that I did have. Bearman became the fourth consecutive driver to score points when making his Grand Prix debut for Ferrari, which is an insane stat. After Ignacio Giunti, Clay Regazzoni, both in 70, and Arturo Merzario in 72. And a stat for Rob. I don't have any of the correct anthems here, but four British drivers scored points in the race today. The first time that has happened since the 1968 French Grand Prix, with Surtees, Stewart, Elford, and someone named Piers Courage.
Okay. That's a good stat.
That is a good one. Lando Norris finished eighth. In the second McLaren, he has 12 points already this season. He needed eight races last year to get the 12 points. Lewis was ninth, finished in the points in all four Jeddah races, but he's gone five races without a top six finish. Nico, this was actually mentioned a couple times, and I didn't realize this. Nico, in P10 today, ended a 20-race pointless streak in Grand Prix, not including sprints, because he'd had that one sprint brilliance. Albon's P11 was Williams' best finish since he finished ninth in Mexico last year. And then Magnussen was 12th for the second straight week, and Yuki was 14th for the second straight week. So those guys liked those spots. And Esteban's P13 was Alpine's best result of the year. It might be for a bit, but we'll see. Okay, here's what I promised from the beginning. Another reason I thought this race was boring: there were 25 overtakes. In the four-year history, that's the lowest amount of overtakes Jeddah has ever given us. Of those overtakes, 20 of the 25, 20 were at turn one, which were clearly DRS overtakes.
Yeah.
20!
Ooh,
so you only had five other overtakes.
They didn't care then, so there were five real overtakes then, is what we're saying.
Yes! Five. But of the total 25, Bearman had the most, look at Ollie, had the most with four, followed by Perez and Tsunoda with three. Tsunoda, though, somehow was also the most overtaken driver, being passed on six occasions. But if you look at the season, so I kept going down this rabbit hole. It's a hole of kind. And so these overtakes, the most overtakes so far this year are Charles, Checo, and Yuki have all had five overtakes each. The number one most overtaken driver this year is Fernando Alonso.
What did I say last week?
We
just seem to see Fernando being overtaken all the time, yet somehow he didn't seem to go backwards. I still don't understand how that whole worked last week. It was like some sort of Donnie Darko alternate reality. But
it's a multiverse situation. But Alonso's been overtaken nine times this year, with Yuki at seven. And Yuki obviously had a bad race there, where he had six in Saudi Arabia. And the only driver to not make a single overtake the whole year is the gas man, Pierre Gasly. Then the only drivers to not be overtaken, and here's why I was banging on Logan a little bit, there's four drivers who haven't been overtaken: Max and Checo, Carlos, and Logan. Three of them have raced at the front, and one of them has... You can't get overtaken if you're last.
He wasn't last.
He was last week.
Done this, you just apologized to him, right? He just... So you're saying that you're not going to give him any credit for bringing it home in 15th and not get overtaken in a place where he was terrible last year here.
No, I think
this kid's learning. I think this kid is learning.
I hope he's learning too, and he's always welcome on the pod, even though
he's not going to want to come on if he listens to you trashing him, is he?
I'm not. Jesus. He's great. I'm a big
fan. Maybe we'll do a one-off episode where it's when Rob met Logan, you know, and we'll just...
Perfect. Speaking of which, do you want to talk real quickly before we do fantasy about the article that the Dirty Side was added to about Logan?
Oh, yeah, that was really cool. and I get his name wrong now, they throw me under pressure. I'm going to say Mark Schofield and just hope that I've nailed it. Was doing a Q&A on Threads saying he's going to spend some time with Logan ahead of the race. He was out in Saudi Arabia and just sort of threw it over to the community. Has anybody got any questions you want to ask? And loads of people piled in with questions. Some of them better than others, you know, some of the obvious ones. You know, what's it like to crash all the time?
Come on.
So we just threw one in. We kind of, you know, just said, what's the one thing that us armchair pundits don't understand about what it takes to wrestle an F1 car under a lap of a circuit? And he really liked that. And he said he would put it forward. And I was thinking, okay, it's nice he said he's going to ask Logan that, but maybe he won't. And then the article got published on SB Nation. I was reading the article, got down to the bottom, and it's like, and here's some questions that came across from our Threads community. The first one we put to Logan was from the Dirty Side of the Track podcast, and he actually linked back to our profile, which was pretty cool. Question to Logan, and just really kind of, that was nice. You know, we haven't interviewed Logan yet, but one of our questions has made it to him.
So it is Mark, and he did a great job. SB Nation, you should check it out. It's on our Twitter, and it's on our website, www.dirtysideofthetrack.com/media, and you'll find that there with a link to the article as well as a quick screenshot of it. So Rob, good on you, because that was you, buddy. So thanks for doing that. Fantasy, on the other hand, was the opposite of good. Fantasy was a disaster of epic proportions. I don't have a sound effect of a bomb going off, but basically I looked at my fantasy team and I knew had no chance. So again, I had been out. I looked Friday morning after FP1 and 2, and I think 3 had just finished. And I had been thinking Thursday night as I'm driving home, I'm thinking, all right, Brian, you got to get out of this RB V carb situation. I was too all in. I made a strategic blunder. I went triple RB. And as Zach Brown would tell you, he doesn't know their name, but that was a bad move by me. So now I have to get, you only get two free maneuvers. And I'm watching Hub Rob and HQ Adam, right, our fantasy friends. I'm watching them saying, wow, maybe you use only one and you get to roll one. And then you can really make changes in Australia if you have three. And I'm thinking, I can't afford that, man. I got to use two. I got to use two to get out of this RB situation. So I'm like, all right, but I don't want to get a penalty. So then I look, Carlos Sainz, appendicitis, and they write inactive. So I have to use a move on Carlos. And then someone sends me a note, Joe has a heavy crash, may not be ready for quali. That's my whole team. I basically, everybody on my team has now disintegrated before quali. I got no signs. I got Joe, who doesn't have a car. I got RB, who don't know how to get the gears engaged right and get moving down the track. I got 5 of 7 guys I got to get rid of. And I'm like, well, how do I do this? And I didn't want to use...
Sorry, just before you go forward there, because that was almost one of my favorite films, Dumb and Dumber. I was just waiting for you to go finish off your rant with all the things you don't have in your team and go, my pets, heads are falling off. I mean, it was...
Just go, man. That John Denver's full of... Anyway, so as I'm looking at it, I'm like, all right, well, I got to do something. So I got rid of RB Constructor and I put in Aston Martin. I got rid of Danny Rick and I put in Nico Hulkenberg, and I got rid of Carlos because I had to, and I put in Fernando Alonso. I took a 10-point penalty because I had to get these guys, and I kept Joe. And I'm like, you know, I want to keep Joe for, you know, weeks forward, and hopefully he gets a bunch of juicy, sweet, medium-rare overtakes in there. And nope, like 47-second pit stop took all of them away at the last couple laps. So
You say all of them like he'd done loads, but I was when you were doing your stats about overtakes this week, I was like waiting for Joe to be like the number one overtaker, and then you were going to get all angry about he lost them all. But he didn't feature on your list of people that had made any. So
yeah. Anyway, and so then the fantasy week unfolded, and you heard my little soliloquy. I finished 151 points strong after my 10-point penalty, 39th in our league, which is not too good. And I was definitely behind Rob. Rob had a decent week. I'm trying to remember where you finished, Rob.
Not that much. Yeah, little bit higher up. I think I had to do some RB surgery as well to kind of get rid of my reliance on them. But I didn't have Carlo, so I had Ferrari. I decided not to roll the dice and get rid of them. I thought Behrman would do okay, hopefully. So I stuck with Ferrari, had Max. I got Valtteri, not Joe. Can't remember who my Oscar came good for me, and I'm just trying to think who my last driver is. But yeah, I had to get rid of Danny Rick. I think I might have even bought Alex in. I can't remember now, but whatever. I finished ahead of you.
You did very, very good job. The good news is the surgery I did should get my team in a decent place for next week, assuming I don't need to make any more appendicitis changes. DJP,
the guy who won this week. Yeah, I mean, you're going to cover him now, right? Yeah.
DJP Racing, 319 points. Now, he used the limitless, he or she used the limitless chip. Max, Fernando, George, Charles, Checo, Red Bull, and Ferrari.
Yeah,
that's a
and
cool
I was going to say,
that's
absolutely,
a cool team.
Absolute kudos for using that chip in this race of all places, because with high propensity for safety cars,
that's risky.
I wouldn't have had the guts to do the limitless chip on this track, because it's like too much jeopardy involved. But hats off, that is a great score.
That's a great score, DJP Racing, followed by SoCal Speed, Kimi Häkkinen, What's the Racing Point, Foot of Lead, San Gaucho F1, Real Kurana, Chicago Gooner. What's up, Adam? I see you. Tails, I win, Andy. And then Potenza Racing Team tied with TMV Racing Reloaded. Amazing job, guys. To everybody, guys and gals there. Just, I'm really impressed that you guys made it through that week and didn't incur the wrath of the F1 gods, the fantasy gods like I did, where I really hosed it up and basically ruined my season. And so in the top three...
ruined your season.
Done. Over. The tears are flowing. The tears are flowing like the salmon in Capistrano. So the DJP Racing and first in the league after that mega week with the Limitless. San Gaucho F1 right behind, actually not too far. And then Kimi Häkkinen not far at all behind second place. So top three there for the I can't even talk. I'm so sad by what happened for the season so far for the Dirty Side. And as we always do, mid-season leader gets a T-shirt.
Are you one of these guys that I don't think you do play golf, but you kind of smack me of the sort of person that has one bad round and puts their golf clubs on buynothing.com because you're just kind of like, that's it, all over, I'm done.
No, I play golf once a year, and I only play after having enough swing juice to not really care. You're close. I'm the guy who, when I'm having a bad round, will actually take an old club out of my bag and break it over my knee and throw it in the woods and then move on.
Just to claim that your season is ruined in race 2 of 24. It's maybe I'm going to file that under melodramatic, Brian. That's where I'm going with that one.
File it under poop, because that's what my team played like.
Oh, man. So that was the Saudi Grand Prix week, one that I kind of enjoyed a bit more than Bahrain, but there wasn't much of a kind of anything to compare against there. Brian seemed to just prefer it over Bahrain, but we're all wild-eyed enthusiasm looking ahead to Australia now in a couple of weeks, thinking that one, mind you, that one doesn't, that one's not great either, is
I'll,
it?
I'll take
sometimes,
it.
But
give me a palate cleanser and a moose bouche of anything other than that.
So we will feature a preview of Australia next week, and we will also have other content.
As always. As always, everyone have a wonderful weekend. For those who observe Ramadan Mubarak, which starts tonight at sundown, we're recording on Sunday. So good luck to all of you with your fasts. And thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see everyone in a week's time.